podcast listener, welcome. It is time to turn the lights down low. Find the one you love. Break out the incense and the love oils. Turn the podcast on and listen to the smooth sounds of me and Dan Walsh talking about sports. During the podcast, you may hear some echoing and some delays in me answering Dan's questions. This is a slight technical glitch that makes me sound like a moron on the podcast. I may very well be a moron, but it is not because of this podcast. Now that you've settled in, let's talk to Dan Walsh from sportsbubbler.com. Dan, are you there?
I am in fact here, good sir.
Hello, how are you?
I'm well. It's been like 3 months since we've done this, I think.
Yeah, it's amazing how you just go, you know, a week and everything that you've talked about is completely different, like in the world of sports. We were supposed to do this podcast last week, and I jotted down some notes on some things to talk about. And I in preparing for this tonight, I just kind of looked over my notes, and it's all stuff like A-Rod and Brett Favre and all that kind of stuff that, like, nobody even cares about anymore.
It's all so old news, man. 3 days later, it's old news.
3 days later, and you're done. But I did write down a note to talk about the Sports Illustrated swimsuit issue.
It is still very relevant.
Yeah. So you still get this magazine?
I do. When it showed up in the mailbox on that Monday afternoon when I got home from work, that made my day.
Okay, here's a couple things. First of all, you may think it's relevant, but now with a couple clicks of a mouse, I mean, you can get anything you want on the internet. So
I mean, there's half-naked pictures of Jessica Alba or Megan Fox out there. There's plenty of hot chicks half-naked, but I don't know. There's some little – it's an icon, and there's just something fun about getting that issue every year. I still have last year sitting in the magazine bin, and I threw every other issue out, but I kept that one laying around.
Well, yeah, it's not like 1989 where, you know, Kathy Ireland shows up. And this is probably true of any old guy. It's like – anything that you did in high school is always the best that ever existed. Like,
Kathy Ireland one was absolutely fantastic and is easily in my top two.
For me, it was Elle McPherson. Like, she was on the cover 1 year, and that graced my wall for years and years and years. But for me, like 1987 to 1992, maybe, I will always consider that the golden age of American music, just because I was in high school and in college at the time.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, whatever you listen to at that time is always going to be the best to you, and you know, everything that.
Is this podcast quickly becoming Grumpy Old Men and how complaining things aren't as good now as they were
absolutely
growing up?
I go from zero to complaint in seconds. Anyway, so my complaint this year is, first of all, part one, Danica Patrick. Enough of her. Enough. She's all right. Okay, granted, she's fine for a race car driver. But you walk down
Water
State
Street,
yeah, any day here in Madison during the summer, and she wouldn't be, you know, in the top 100. So enough of this Danica Patrick nonsense. She's not a swimsuit model.
No, I agree, but they have to tie sports in somehow, some way. But
there's always some tennis babes.
I was just disappointed that, you know, on the cover they have, you know, NBA dance team. And you open it up, and there's no Bucks Energy dancers inside. No Milwaukee love, once again, denied.
And they didn't put John McLaughlin in there?
No.
Oh, God. I want my money back. He and Paschke, like, feeding each other grapes.
Oh, that kind of like, you know, Euchre's photo. Euchre's photo from Sports Illustrated when he's hanging out in the swimsuit.
Yes, I posted to that, as a matter of fact. I posted that on the blog.
That was disturbing then, and McLaughlin would have been just as disturbing.
Here's the other thing. Body paint. I think body paint has pretty much run its course.
Nope.
You're a fan of the body paint?
I have no issues with the body paint. I am a fan of the body paint.
Unless you're the guy actually sitting there applying the paint, I mean, what is this? This really does nothing for me. Because you have to squint really hard to see if you can see anything, and then...
And he's probably thinking these girls are thinking me some pervert, so I better not really actually look at them while I'm doing this.
It confuses the senses. It's like, what is really going on here? It's too much for me. Anyway,
Well, I mean, half the women are covered in tattoos, which is body paint anyway, so it works out that way.
That's true. Okay, let's get to the most important pressing issue of the day. What does your wife think about me?
Being that she denied your Facebook friendship request,
yes.
I'm going to have to say she doesn't like you, man.
Oh,
I mean, you know, giving us, you know, the Marquette baby shirt, you know, that was nice and all, but that's not Facebook friendship worthy, apparently.
I have a Facebook friend her, and she's like, who's this guy? Deny. And then you tell her after the fact, she's still like,
yeah, pretty much. You disappointed her that Sunday morning when you were hanging out with Charlie Sykes, and ever since, she's pretty much denied you all the way through.
So she's unaware that this has become the singular mission of my life, is to somehow turn Mrs. Walsh around on the whole issue.
Yeah, she has no... I don't think she really exists, realizes that you even exist, for that matter, I think.
Every TV appearance, every radio appearance, every column I write, I'm like, God, I got to get her.
you would have to be emailing them to her, because I'm pretty sure she's not reading it. She's reading, you know, pregnancy week number 31, and what's the heat.
What to expect.
Yeah,
all
that nonsense.
All right, well, I'll keep trying.
Keep the effort. I can only do so much, my friend. I can only do so much.
I only have so many Facebook Facebook friend requests in me.
I don't think it would hurt to give it a second shot.
Then I'll get denied again and just bitch about it.
Pretty much, that's fine. That's fine. No harm in that.
All right, the sports story on the lips of every American: the 73-year-old basketball player
is ineligible
in Tennessee. Flunks the Spanish class and is now ineligible to play.
A great story, completely down the drain, because that guy couldn't hack it in a class. He could barely hack it on the court, and now he couldn't hack it off the court either.
Yeah, what is the status of this team where you got a 73-year-old guy playing for you?
It's pure publicity, you know, anything to get anybody to actually talk about your team in any way, shape, or form. But I mean,
get Danica Patrick to play for him.
You figure,
apparently she's
you know, the guy's retired. You figure his wife is retired. His wife should have been helping him out, doing his homework.
But to flunk Spanish when you're 7, I guess your retention might not be as good, but still.
Yeah.
I mean, those are the things that you think about, you know, college players of today not being able to make.
They got so many. They got 5 tutors for each class. I mean, it's set up. For them, they're set up to succeed in any way possible and give them every opportunity to pass.
Yeah, he's cutting class, he's like he's out drinking,
boozing up at the bars, hanging out with the ladies, you know, cheerleaders, nine yards.
The cheerleaders are all over at his house. He's living the life. It's got to be a high life in D1 too.
Yeah, I don't think the D1 girls or the JUCO girls compare to D1. College hoops groupies.
It was actually funny when I was, I mean, you know the story, when I worked at Utah as a manager, and I was the worst manager in the history of basketball, because I just, you know, I love playing, so I'd just be shooting around and stuff and getting in trouble, mm-hmm. not doing the things I was supposed to do. So Majerus calls me into his office one day, and he starts swearing at me, and he says, you know, if you want to be a basketball player, you go out and you play Division II, or, you know, you go transfer or do something like that. And I walk out of there, I'm like, wow, he thinks I'm good enough to play Division II. That was like a big boost for me. It was nice. I put that on, capable of playing Division II
nice.
Basketball.
You can keep living that dream.
That's all I got. Somehow over the weekend, I got sucked into watching the NFL Combine.
That's the lowest of lows, man. I mean, you got to be the geekiest of geeks to really be interested and spend more than 5 minutes watching that nonsense.
But I'm not one of these guys that actually sits there and thinks that I know that I can see a certain way a guy blocks. Or, you know, when he's doing the shuttle run.
Yeah, neither and neither can the
they don't do it with a racer.
Yeah, neither can the other 98% of the people watching the combine. Anybody who can actually realize that stuff is the scouts that are there. And even then, they don't get that much in advance. I mean, most of the teams admit, you know, they've watched so much on film, what they see at the combine isn't really going to change that. They get more out of the interviews that they take off the field than actually at the combine with their stats.
Well, my son is 3 years old, and he actually started we were watching the, I guess it was the running back sprints, and he was somehow inspired by this, and so he started just tearing around the house, showing how fast he could run. So I'm thinking this might have actually been some kind of incentive for him to start his athletic career.
Just don't teach him how to be like Lawrence Phillips, and he will be just fine.
I think, yeah. I don't think he'll be playing running back or wide receiver.
He's got your athletic skills.
He might be a kicker. He's got my height. He's a pipsqueak. But, yeah. But he can run fast. He runs in circles
around
the house.
There you go. You got a track star. A budding track star.
One of the most troubling things about the combine, though, is
you love it. You don't try to deny
it. It used to be where they would wear like the baggy shorts and whatever, just show up and start working out. Now they're wearing essentially what they wear in volleyball, like in women's volleyball. They're wearing those outfits, and apparently
certain
it's catching on in certain.
I found it through another website, but there's apparently a website called like OutSports that focuses on the gay community in sports, and apparently there is a huge contingency that enjoys watching the NFL Combine strictly for the tight clothes that the players are wearing.
But think about it: if there were a combine for women's volleyball players,
I would be there in a heartbeat.
Like, right? You're watching the combine. It's a Sunday afternoon. There's nothing else on, and like the women's volleyball draft is coming up. You want to see who can go side to side, who can run around the cones, and they're wearing what they wear to play.
Well, that's one of the big things with the NCAA. The NCAA is debating about bringing sand volleyball to NCAA athletics. But the part that they've struggled with the most is having uniform standards, because they don't want them to look like the professionals in their tight and tiny, skimpy outfits. So they're trying to create some uniforms and have a standard of what the women's sand volleyball uniforms can look like in college. And that's the biggest struggle they're running into right now.
What really is the point?
No, I mean, if the articles of clothes aren't going to only cover 10% of their body, then what's the point?
Well, I mean, you're the big media star now, so if you could get the TV contract for that.
I'm still waiting for my free cable from those Time Warner appearances. I'm still waiting for my free cable. I haven't gotten it yet.
Yes, you're the one. Yeah, you're the one that doesn't get cable. You have to steal it from.
I use my buddy's Sling Box, and then I can watch his TV at all times. So that's pretty much how I watch my sports, is on my computer. I use my buddy's Sling Box code, and I can just sit and watch anything on cable on my computer. So I'm saving myself, you know, $90 a month through my buddy's Sling Box. So I'm a big fan of the Sling Box.
If I were you, I would be looking out my window right now, just waiting for the feds to pull up. You're going to see some flashing
lights. That's fine.
Lights
this podcast guarantee. Very well might end very shortly.
All right. Okay, so speaking of the combine and the draft.
Very nice. Very nice.
It's like I've been doing this for almost a year. Who are the Packers going to do?
I have no idea. Conventional wisdom has them taking about 5 different guys on defense. So, knowing Ted Thompson, he will find a wide receiver to draft at number 9.
Yeah, I mean, it's conventional wisdom always. For dumb fans like me, we always say, okay, well, where are they hurting the most and where they need the most help? And then we start to think who's available at that position. But it's pretty clear that that's not how Ted Thompson thinks. He's just going to take, regardless of position, he's just going to take
whoever
he wants.
Feels. But I really think... You know, I think there's actually enough pressure from people above Ted Thompson that he's got to make a draft choice that's going to have immediate impact on defense. I don't think there's any question that that's the person he has to pick at number nine. He can't get away with drafting another Jordy Nelson at nine, you know, another wide receiver. He's got to go defense, and it's got to be a guy who's going to make an impact, not be a Justin Harrell type of guy who's sitting on the sidelines with injuries half the time. It's got to be a full-blown star who's going to earn his paycheck.
Yeah, I know you can't badmouth the mothership, but you know, I was listening to a little sports talk radio over the weekend, and you know, the guys were going on and on about the switch from the 4-3 to the 3-4, and this is the type of player they need to draft, and you know, here's who has the skills on defense and who can make the switch.
They have no idea.
I mean, this is, they're just completely making shit up. I mean, it's like,
absolutely, they're making that up.
Campman is good side to side. Yeah. And, you know, that's the wonder of sports talk radio, which is...
It's kind of like sports blogging. You can pretend to know what the hell you're talking about when in reality, half the time you don't.
Yeah. I mean, Don Capers has only been doing this for 30 years, so I guess he's going to take advice from these guys on the radio. You know. Anyway. But, yeah, so I did my post yesterday about this guy, Michael Orr, who I read the book... Blind Side by Michael Lewis, and again, he may or may not be the best pick for the Packers. Again, I'm a dummy, so I don't know, but you know, if he's around, just to cap off his life story, I mean, it'd be nice.
Yeah, it sounds like a hell of a story. I know Greg Bedard from the Journal Sentinel and the Packers Insider, he's doing like a book review, and that's the very first book that they're starting off with is The Blind Side about him. And I haven't had a chance to – it's on my list of numerous things to finish reading once I finish What to Expect When You're Expecting. And
she's actually making you read it. Huh?
Thankfully, I'm still on page one on that book at this point in time. But on my list is I'd really like to check out The Blind Side. It sounds like a pretty fascinating read.
Well, yeah, it's good even if you're not a Packer fan, just because all the areas that it covers. But if for some reason the Packers do draft him, and we're probably we're talking way too much about him for somebody that they're not even going to draft. But if they do end up drafting him. I mean, then it becomes almost required reading, just because it is such a great book. But, you know, people say, well, you know, the Packers don't exactly need offense, but
yeah.
Tauscher and Clifton, those guys aren't getting.
Yeah, they're not
any
spring
younger.
Chickens, and I'm still not convinced that they're the answer for the problems that the running game had this past season. I mean, the running game was far from average in my mind on the holes that they were creating. And, you know, you got to look at players like Tauscher and Clifton and wonder if they've still got enough in the tank to pull it off anymore.
Well, so if you're somebody like me and you just say, well, okay, they're switching to the 3-4 instead of the 4-3, then you're obviously talking, speed at outside linebacker, that type of stuff. So who on defense is going to be around at nine? I mean, you're the guy on TV talking about this. So I'm
I didn't Google any mock drafts before this conversation started. So I honestly, I don't know. I did a mock draft with the guys from Chucky Hacks and the Bucky Channel and Brewtown Beat. And the Packers weren't play the teams I had to draft, so I was honestly picking teams that weren't looking at the Packers, so I honestly couldn't tell you who could possibly be fitting for them. I honestly haven't been paying enough attention to the draft on that.
Yeah, I mean, for average fans like me, it's you sit there and you look at the first round, and there are two criteria. It's what do the Packers need, and who have I heard of? And so if you draft somebody that's not in either of those categories, then it's like, boo!
Well, it sounds like this kid from Boston College, I think, seems to be someone who a lot of people are liking, but they're not necessarily convinced that he's going to be still available at nine. He's kind of a, one day the mock drafts love him, and then the next day they don't. Next day he's dropping. Bijay Raji is his name, R-A-J-I, is the kid from Boston College who they think can make an immediate impact in the 3-4.
Are you actually
yes, absolutely.
Chicago?
I went to the boys at Cheesehead.tv, one of the Packers blogs around, and the ones that I read on a daily basis. And Cheesehead.tv had a post on it earlier today, so I knew if I went there, I could find who the hell that kid's name from Boston College was. So there you go.
Anything you want to say about Favre?
I'll believe he's retired when one actually happens. And I got my fingers crossed that he doesn't land that ESPN gig. Although if he does land the ESPN gig, I'll still be happy I don't have cable.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, they gush over him enough. If he's actually on the premises, I mean, it's just going to be... The cleaning crew there is
going to be
working
overtime.
One
guy. You know, he's going to be the only one on TV because everybody else is going to be underneath the desk.
Exactly. All right.
There's a basketball game on tomorrow night.
Oh, you know what? I was going to mention all my Viking fans.
Sage.
Friends. Yes, they're super psyched about the pickup of Sage Rosenfels, who has, you know, such a history of taking teams to the Super Bowl, or even to the playoffs for that matter. So,
yeah,
good for them.
He's got a great track record that he's bringing to the Vikings. I mean, it just oozes confidence out of the Twin Cities.
Yeah, the Dolphin years, I think, were especially kind to Sage Rosenfels. All right, let's talk about the big game.
I'll be there. You won't be, I'm assuming?
Yeah. Okay. I will not be there, no, because you haven't offered me a ticket. You're the big-time media guy.
I got season tickets. That comes all out of my comes out of my wallet for the season tickets. I could go sit in press row, but I'd rather hang out with the wife and watch the game in our season tickets.
Well, we went to a game earlier in the year. We went to the Marquette-UWM game. And at that point, it really didn't look like – I think I said to you that for Marquette, this did not look like a Big East offense. What they were running at the time. And they blew out UWM on the, you know, UWM's got
big
the big
lumber,
fat guy.
James Ayers.
I had a couple nicknames for him. None of them really took off. What'd I call him, like the giant bratwurst?
I think the giant bratwurst sounded about right. I think that's what we voted on. And then I think like two, maybe 3 weeks later, beginning of January, I went and saw the UWM-GB game at the Cell. And the TV announcer called him Big Lumber that night, and Big Lumber has kind of stuck ever since.
So good for him.
The guy's got a nice touch for Pointland, but
he's a 300 pounder, and he pulls up from three. And all Bradley,
but I've got a bigger vertical than he does. There's no doubt about that. I you know, he was getting rebounds in that game, and he's, you know, jumping a quarter inch off the ground. I can jump higher than that. Well, absolutely. I'm a D1 player, man. I got the skills.
If you're as good as me, you can play D2. I'd be passing to some 73-year-old guy.
Nice. Yeah, so...
But early in the year, I absolutely never would have guessed that this is what Marquette would have in store for them, that they'd be... You know, so high up in the Big East, they've only lost.
That is correct. Nova and South Florida back to back, and South Florida is a game that I know they wish they could have back because they played horrendous that game and still had a chance to pull out the victory. Now, the Nova game, it was tough. They were running into the buzzsaw that is Nova, and I mean Nova at home, and that's just a tough. That's a tough place to play, no matter what. But you know, two losses with four games to go in the Big East. I mean, they've already set. You know, a team record for most wins in the Big East at 12. I mean, you can't – it's almost impossible to complain about the way this team has been this year. And I don't think anybody, even probably Buzz himself, thought that his team could be in this position at this point in time. You know, they struggled at times, you know, during the early half of the season at times. But once Big East play kicked in, they've really turned it up a notch.
Well, just with the lack of size that they had, I mean – you know, they've got the three guards, and then Lazar, and then you know, you got Dwight Burke in there, who's not exactly a force.
No, he's not.
You know, every time I think of him, for some reason, I think of Doris Burke, who might actually be a little better down there. Let me go on record. I am pro Doris Burke, even when she shows up in the guys' games. And I am pro. I'm really stepping out here, but I'm actually pro Pam Ward.
No, you're
too.
Not.
Because she ends up doing a lot of the Badger games, and so I watch
Pam
Ward,
is
and
arguably, honestly, the worst announcer out there.
I will defend there, Pam Ward.
She's indefensible. There's no way you can defend Pam Ward. Pam Ward is.
What does she do that's all that bad?
You know what? I need to send you some links from Awful Announcing, because she is. I mean, they announce, they have, you know, they have a running season tally on who's the worst TV announcer, and she's won like three straight years because she's that bad.
Give me any day of the week, I would take an announcing team of Pam Ward and Doris Burke over Paschke
no
and McLaughlin.
Way. No way. Put down the crack pipe, man. You're way off on that.
I got the NBA package, so I watched the Bucks Denver game, and it wasn't on FSN, so I watched it on the with the Nuggets announcers, and oh, it was just a breath of fresh air.
Like, well, I saw some people arguing on our site that they hated the Denver announcers, that they thought they were just awful.
Well, I mean, they're homers, but see, I don't like homers of just call the game as if you're. You know, no Buck has ever fouled anybody. And if I hear one more McLaughlin talk about his days with Kareem, I'm just going to hang myself. I just can't take it. I'll tell you what, Jim.
You've got a little pent up frustration on the Bucks and the broadcast team, don't you?
I pay enough for the season ticket. Or for cable or whatever, for the dish. I just like somebody, you know, somebody who has a reference from you know, more recent than my date of birth. I mean, that's
so
all I'm really
why don't you turn down the sound and turn on Ted Davis instead? Are you not one of those guys who turns the TV sound and puts the radio sound on?
No, I do that for Packer games. I think that might even be a uniquely Wisconsin thing to do, is to turn down the TV, especially when
the Monday night games are unbearable, man.
And throw on Wayne Larrabee, who I worship at the altar of Wayne Larrabee.
What I don't understand sometimes, and you know, I guess I don't understand this phenomenon, is that you'll be at Miller Park or at Lambeau Field, and people will have their headsets on, and they'll be listening to the game inside the stadium.
I've never understood that
phenomenon. I guess, you know, if I'm at the game, I want to take in the ambiance, everything around me. I don't want to feel like I'm, you know, listening to the game inside my living room. But
well, for you, ambiance is code for three or
something
four
like that. Yeah,
I guess you could still take those in if you're wearing the headphones.
Yeah,
the two-fisted slapper. Yeah.
So we were talking about Marquette, weren't we?
Where did
we end up at this point?
Something about Paschke and McLaughlin and my son running
something
around the
like
house.
Okay.
Something like that.
All right, so who are you predicting for UConn-Marquette? Who's going to win the game?
I think UConn.
Okay, well, you're wrong, because Marquette will win. Marquette's going to win.
I'm wrong?
Now, if UConn had not lost Jerome Dyson.
First of all, I'm sorry I gave the wrong answer on that. So go ahead and explain. Yeah, go ahead and explain.
I think Marquette, it would have been a much tougher battle if Jerome Dyson hadn't been lost for the year. But since UConn lost Dyson, I don't think they've been playing as well. And I think them losing Dyson is actually a benefit to Marquette, because they're going to have to lean on the beat a little bit more than they would with Dyson, and I think that plays into Marquette's favor, and I really think that's a benefit to Marquette, and that's why I think, especially with the home crowd, 19,000, they're going to be jacked up for that game, and I honestly think Marquette's going to pull that game out.
here's why UConn is going to win. Because Jim Calhoun makes $1.6 million a year.
Or a penny less.
And he's not giving any of it back.
Don't you feel in this economy that you should be, you know, you're the highest paid state employee.
When people stop going to the games because of the bad economy, then he can start giving money back. But as long as they're still packing
absolutely. The stadium. That, I mean, if you're a reporter and you've got an agenda that you want to attack somebody at a press conference not related to the game that was just happening, you got to do a little bit more research than what that clown did. Because, I mean, he just looked like an absolute fool.
Well, yeah, I mean, working in the state capitol, we audited the UW-Madison athletic department a couple years ago. And, I mean, the whole athletic department is essentially self-sufficient. It's not in any way attached to the state general fund. So it's not, you know, you can cut the entire athletic department, and it's not going to make a bit of difference when you're talking about
but,
a state.
But in reality, it's not self-sufficient. It's sufficient. It's supported by the football and men's basketball team. That's where all the money comes into, and then it gets dispersed amongst all the other teams as well.
Right. Right. Well, yes. That's the case at UW-Madison. So, actually, it's not. From what I recall, it costs so much to run the football team. They don't make as much money as you mm-hmm. think. I think it's the basketball team that actually makes a you
now.
Know,
what
ton
about?
Of money
do you remember the hockey numbers? Did the hockey poll? I know the Badgers hockey team is fairly popular. I'm just sort of curious. It just seems that hockey might be a fairly expensive sport too, with all the equipment per se.
I don't remember that. I'll have to follow up on that, and maybe I'll post that as a link to this post, but. There was one, the audit came back that we did, and it wasn't very positive for the UW mm-hmm. athletic department. So we had one state senator who he's like, well, maybe we should hold off on making this public just now, and we're like, okay, well, we can wait a couple months, I guess. So like a month later, we called down to his office. So are we ready to release the results of the audit? Well, he's going to be back in about a week. He's not in the Rose Bowl.
Jeez, there's a shock.
Yeah, I'm sure he got a full paid trip down to the Rose Bowl. And he ended up in prison.
That's true.
So not for that, for something else.
Very interesting.
Yeah. So. Yeah,
Marquette,
so
again, I think somewhere along the lines we were talking, and you were going to tell me why. You said Jim Calhoun was the reason why Marquette was going to lose and UConn was going to win.
That's it. That's all I got. Dominique James can't.
Yes, but he can pass. He can pass and drive and penetrate.
He can pass? Has he ever?
Absolutely. With him driving to the basket, the defenses collapse. He dishes out. It's the only
has
game
been,
he, the only
has
game
been caught on film.
Oh, you're killing
Dominique
me.
James throwing
you're
a pass.
Me. The only
look, I'm a warrior myself.
You were never
I,
a warrior.
I would love for
you
them
were
to
a
win.
Golden Eagle the entire time. Don't pretend to be a warrior.
I know. I'm just not a Dominique James guy. After his freshman year, where he has like a press conference to tell people that, oh yeah, I'm coming back to school. It's like, okay, well, thanks for that. I don't know what. What draft he was going to enter, the Turkish draft? I mean, what was he thinking? Yes, 5'9" guards, athletic guards who can't shoot a lick. So, they're in high demand.
You know, the worst game Marquette played this year was the South Florida game, and that's when Dominique James was 1-for-9 from behind the arc for three-point land. But you know what? When he's not shooting the ball, it makes everybody else on that floor that much better. And if he's only taken you know, 4 to 5 3-pointers in the game, hitting one or two of them, but driving and penetrating enough to draw the defense in, it makes everybody else, Lazar, Rell, and Matthews, that much better. I'm a Dominique James fan. You're killing me. Oh.
I am, of course, playing.
I know
playing devil's advocate here because
making me prove my point. How dare you?
I mean, I. I'm like these dopes on ESPN. I mean, didn't John Kruk actually say that at one point? They're like, yeah, the bosses here made me say that Pittsburgh was going to win the NL Central or something just to be an idiot.
Absolutely.
Just have something to argue about. So, no, I am excited about the Marquette Warriors racing through the Big East. I actually hope they lose their first game in the Big East tournament because
you want
who
them
cares
rested.
If they actually win? It's going to take them. Yeah, it's going to take them 4 days, four games, and 4 grueling days to win the Big East. And who really cares if they win the Big East?
Well, I think that it's actually they get a double bye now because they've opened it up. The tournament spot.
Yeah. Is it all 16 Big East teams?
Everybody gets in. Everybody gets in.
Oh. Pretty soon the Big East is going to be as big as the NCAA tournament. You could have 64 teams.
I mean, they
got
to do something with the Big East. I mean, there's just too many teams and there's too many dogs of some dog teams in there that are, I mean, like.
Well, every conference has their dog teams. It just so happens the Badgers are one this year.
Come on, the Badgers might make the dance.
No. Yeah, no, I don't feel, you know, I'm not a Badger. I root for them in football, but I don't take any particular pleasure in them not being, you know, when they lose six games in a row. So, I don't know. I feel the pain of the Badger fans. It's just fun to nudge. It's fun to nudge them every now and then because they think they're like the University of Sports now.
It's been a nice run, but the history's not back there yet.
Brett Bielema has one bad year, and now it's, you know, the Fire Brett Bielema.
That didn't take long. I'm still waiting for the Fire Bill Ryan ones. I'm not sure if there's one up yet or not. Be shocked. There's probably some bitter student out there who feels they don't have enough athletic players and should be fired somewhere.
Yeah, we here in Wisconsin have proven that we can be as dumb as SEC schools when they're ready to fire. They're ready to fire Urban Meyer after he even loses like the first game of the year.
So, what else you got?
All right. You wanted to talk about Tiger Woods. Go for it.
It's nice to actually care about hockey or golf again. Are you still there? Oh, I lost you there.
Yes. All right, thanks for tuning in to the
podcast. Sorry about that. I think it's fantastic for golf because I, for one, will actually start paying attention and watching golf on the weekends for a change. I haven't since his battle against Rocco. I can't say I've watched a single tournament on TV, so I'm actually pretty excited and looking forward to him in the match play this weekend.
So Phil Mickelson last week.
And nobody cares.
Looks like he's. Yeah. Now you posted some pictures of that prove how unpopular Phil is.
I put that up in the Daily Drink on Sports Bubbler today, and it was shot. It was two photos taken from the driving range today at the before the practice round at match play, and there's a shot of a photo. There's a photo of Tiger taking a couple hits, and there's 50 reporters right behind Tiger as he's taking shots. And then 2 minutes later when Tiger goes off to tee number one, they took another picture of Mickelson on the driving range. And there's not one camera pointed in his direction. All 150 cameras are all off facing Tiger on the first tee. And there's not a single person. I mean, there's two people sticking around, hanging around him, behind him, but other than that, there's no media member whatsoever paying attention to Phil.
Now, I noticed last week, I watched a little bit of the golf when I wasn't watching the NFL Combine.
Phil has down his man boobs are not nearly as big.
And this is what's troubling. Sure, he lost a little bit of weight, but he's taking it to the extreme where he's wearing tight shirts now, the guys at the NFL Combine are actually wearing. He's one of these chicks that's she loses a little bit of weight, and so now she thinks it's ready to show it off. When it's like,
just because they make it in your size, Phil, doesn't mean you should be wearing it because it ain't pretty.
Right. He's a little bit too proud of his modest weight loss.
It's 5 pounds. Wait till you cut about 15 off here, Phil, and then.
He's like, I was running 5 miles a day for 3 months to get here, so I'm going to wear a tight shirt.
He's not ready for that yet. Not at all.
No.
You ready for spring training, baseball?
All right.
First game. It's Wednesday, tomorrow, today, whenever people listen to it. It's 2 o'clock, Brewers Radio Network. Corey Provis, his first game with Euchre.
A former Hokie, not graduate, but a former. He did some announcing.
Yeah, he's done a ton of jobs. Tech, right? And absolutely. Syracuse, Virginia Tech, Wake Forest. He was down at Mississippi, and then, I mean, he's been all over the place. He's got, and he's only like 30 years old. It's like he pretty much worked. He's worked every possible job in broadcasting you could ever imagine. And from my interview, I think he's going to be pretty good with Euchre.
Well, if they let him in the city limits of Blacksburg, then he's obviously a genius.
Right, much exactly. Like the Vick brothers. Yeah. Comparing him to Michael Vick. Very nice. Very nice.
And you asked him the question about, you know, are Brewer fans going to take to him after having worked for the Cubs? I mean,
I think there's a little
to me. Not that you would ask the question, but for people to say, well, he's a Cubs loyalist.
I think people will get over that pretty quickly once they hear a couple of games. Because, I mean, like he said in the interview, I mean, he is a Syracuse alum, and then his first job is with Virginia Tech, who at the time they were rivals, big rivals, and that was, you know, that was sacrilege to go to the enemy for him. But he still did it, and the guys at Virginia Tech thought he did a fantastic job. So, I'm not terribly worried. I think he knows he's a professional, and he'll know how to balance it.
It was always funny to me to watch Mike Tirico, who went to Syracuse, do Syracuse football games, because you could tell he was not detached in any way. So, you know, they'd miss a field goal, and Tirico would just be like, and it's a complete disaster.
Yeah, some people try to hide it. Him, not so much.
<It's> like, that was always a running joke between my friends and I. So, let's talk about the NBA for just a second. Devin Harris, All-Star, Dwayne Wade, All-Star. So you've got some guys that played against each other, some former rivals that are now right at the top.
Oh, absolutely. It's been absolutely fantastic. And, you know, Devin Harris had that incredible buzzer beater last night. And, I mean, just to see those two guys who, you know, had the potential and, you know, you were kind of curious when they left college, you know, how well they could excel in the NBA. And it's great to see that, you know, 4 or 5 years later, since they've been out, they've really started to peak their game. And it's been fantastic to see.
Yeah. And there are even some guys that you wouldn't even expect to, I mean, Travis Diener, I told you I have the NBA ticket. And so I end up watching a bunch of Pacers games just because I want to see if Diener gets in. And he actually does. You know, who would have thought that he'd even be playing in the NBA in 3 years?
NBA will always be looking for a decent backup guards who can dish and who've got a halfway decent shot, and he's got that. And he'll be around the NBA for a while because there'll always be a team that'll be looking for a backup point guard. And then, you know, even you look at Steve Novak too. I mean, he can't play defense worth a lick, but the guy can shoot the three like nobody's business. So some team is always going to be looking for a sharpshooter to come off the bench.
Agreed. No, Diener's not going to really give you. I mean, I've watched a lot of his games this year. He'll dribble it up. He has this little move where he moves to the right and then he just flips it behind him to a guy running behind him, and that's really all he does. But he doesn't make any mistakes. And you know, when you got, you know, knuckleheads like Jarrett Jack and those guys who you know, they're throwing the ball away all the time. You know, he actually. You know, he's been getting some good playing time, especially, you know, TJ Ford's.
Absolutely, he is. It's been great to see.
I mean, you never know what Wisconsin athletes are going to make it big. I mean, Jim Sorge.
He does,
a,
and that's so. Just a Travis Shen mockery if there ever was.
Tearing up the NFL. He's at the
He has no business with a ring. No business, but that's something he can tell his grandkids about for ages and ages.
Indeed. All right. So what?
We're gonna do a
out on?
A cover of Bruce Springsteen's "Dancing in the Dark" by Tegan and Sarah. I had a friend of mine send me about 65 cover songs, and this is the first one I grabbed to send your way, and that's what we're closing with.
All right, fantastic, Dan Walsh, Sports.
Chris, thank you very much. Appreciate it. I continue to be baffled why you continually ask me back, but I'll be happy to do this again sometime. I will.
All right, work on your wife for me.
Hey, wait now.
I mean, don't take that the wrong way.
I'll get her to be friends with you on Facebook, all right?
I'll talk to you later.
I get up in the evening, and I ain't got nothing to say. I come home in the morning, I go to bed feeling the same way. I ain't nothing but tired. I'm just starting bored with myself. Hey there, baby, I could use just a little help. You can't start a fire. Can't start a fire without a spark. This gun is for hire. Even if we're just dancing in the dark. Message keeps getting clearer. Radio's on and I'm moving around my place.